Hello, this is Joy Ray Freeman. The following program, This Too Shall Pass, was produced in 2003. For empowerment workshops and retreats and or healing opportunities, check out joy2u.org. This is Joy Ray Freeman, bringing joy to the world. This too shall pass. The turmoil, violence, and aggressive acts are a part of the clearing away of old structures, old practices, and old beliefs. Much like the fever or a boil that our body creates to get rid of an infection and to break the pattern. And though uncomfortable during the transition, the only way past the dark veil is through it. On the other side, and well deserved, is peace, unity, freedom, and joy.
Seven weeks of years, the trumpet sounds in our ears. We will not be silent till justice shines like the dawn.
Like the dawn.
War upon nations, out of darkness the light of jubilee. Out of darkness, the light of jubilee.
Expand God's light, day and night. We gather up the pages of time from long ago. Intelligence has grown, understanding too. God's will is showing more through me and you. Knowing God's love, personal love, will never do. I am light and I arise in the light. I maintain myself by day, then grow dim at night. while I find rapture in the greater light above, on these planes as well as on planes below, I am a focus of light through which God's glory grows. We know who and what we are. As we radiate the perfect one, the Christ light star, we keep in mind that we are builders of his plan. God's dream comes true through his light, through man. We never tear asunder and often mend a line. We create and build as models of God's light divine. We keep God's idea in front of us, our contact strong. As we place our hand in the Lord's all day and all night long. Gathering these pages into our book of life, we tidy them up and insert a new page. I am the love of Christ. At all times, this love flows through. It lights up my life and ends all strife. It makes each one my brother, too. The War Prayer by Mark Twain. It was a time of great and exalting excitement. The country was up in arms. The war was on. In every breast burned the holy fire of patriotism. The drums were beating, the bands playing, the toy pistols popping, the bunched firecrackers hissing and sputtering. On every hand and far down the receding and fading spreads of roofs and balconies, a fluttering wilderness of flags flashed in the sun. Daily, the young volunteers marched down the wide avenue gay and fine in their new uniforms. The proud fathers and mothers and sisters and sweethearts cheering them with voices choked with happy emotion as they swung by. Nightly, the packed mass meetings listened, panting, to patriot oratory, which stirred the deepest depths of their hearts, and which they interrupted at briefest intervals with cyclones of applause, the tears running down their cheeks all the while. In the churches, the pastors preached devotion to flag and country and invoked the God of battles, beseeching his aid in our good cause, in outpouring of fervid eloquence which moved every listener. It was indeed a glad and gracious time, and the half-dozen rash spirits that ventured to disapprove of the war and cast a doubt upon its righteousness straight away got such a stern and angry warning that for their personal safety's sake they quickly shrank out of sight and offended no more in that way. Sunday morning came next day. The battalions would leave for the front. The church was filled. The volunteers were there, their faces alight with material dreams, visions of a stern advance. The gathering momentum, the rushing charge, the flashing sabers, the flight of the foe, the tumult, the enveloping smoke, the fierce pursuit, the surrender. Then home from the war, bronzed heroes welcomed, adored, submerged in golden seas of glory. With the volunteers sat their dear ones, proud, happy, and envied by the neighbors and friends who had no sons and brothers to send forth to the field of honor, there to win for the flag or, failing, die the noblest of noble deaths. The service proceeded. A war chapter from the Old Testament was read. The first prayer was said. It was followed by an organ burst that shook the building. And with one impulse, the house rose, with glowing eyes and beating hearts, and poured out that tremendous invocation, God, the all-terrible, thou who ordainest thunder thy clarion and lightning thy sword. Then came the long prayer. None could remember the like of it for passionate pleading and moving and beautiful language. The burden of its supplication was that an ever-merciful and benign Father of us all would watch over our noble young soldiers and aid, comfort, and encourage them in their patriotic work. Bless them, shield them in His mighty hand, make them strong and confident, invincible, in the bloody onset. Help them to crush the foe. Grant to them and to their flag and country imperishable honor and glory. An aged stranger entered and moved with slow and noiseless step up the main aisle, his eyes fixed upon the minister, his long body clothed in a robe that reached to his feet, his head bare, his white hair descending in a frothy cascade to his shoulders, his seamy face unnaturally pale, pale even to ghastliness. With all eyes following him and wondering, he made his silent way without pausing. He ascended to the preacher's side and stood there waiting. With shut lids, the preacher, unconscious of his presence, continued his moving prayer and at last finished it with the words uttered in fervent appeal. Bless our arms, grant us the victory. O Lord, our God, Father, and Protector of our land and flag. The stranger touched his arm, motioned him to step aside, while the startled minister obeyed and took his place next to the stranger. During some moments, he surveyed the spellbound audience with solemn eyes in which burned an uncanny light. Then, in a deep voice, he said, I came from the throne bearing a message from Almighty God. The words smote the house with shock. If a stranger perceived it, he gave no attention. He has heard the prayer of his servant, your shepherd, and grant it, if such shall be your desire, after I, his messenger, shall have explained to you its import, that is to say, its full import. For it is like unto many of the prayers of men in that it asks for more than he who utters it is aware of, except he pause and think. God's servant and yours has prayed his prayer. Has he paused and taken thought? Is it one prayer? No. It is two, one uttered and the other not. Both have reached the ear of his who heareth all supplications, the spoken and the unspoken. Ponder this, keep it in mind. If you beseech a blessing upon yourself, beware lest without intent you invoke a curse upon a neighbor at the same time. If you pray for the blessing of rain upon your crop which needs it, by that act you are possibly praying for a curse upon some neighbor's crop which may not need rain and can be injured by it. You have heard your servant's prayer, the uttered part of it. I am commissioned by God to put into words the other part of it, that part which the pastor and also you in your hearts fervently prayed silently and ignorantly and unthinkingly. God grant that it was so. You heard these words, grant us the victory, O Lord our God. That was sufficient. The whole of the uttered prayer is compact into those pregnant words. Elaborations were not necessary. When you have prayed for victory, you have prayed for many unmentioned results which follow victory. It must follow it. Cannot help but follow it. Upon the listening Spirit of God the Father fell also the unspoken part of the prayer. He commandeth me to put it into words. Listen. O Lord, our Father, our young patriots, idols of our heart, go forth to battle. Be thou near them. With them in spirit, we also go forth from the sweet peace of our beloved firesides to smite the foe. O Lord, our God, help us to tear their soldiers to bloody shreds with our shells. Help us to cover their smiling fields with the pale forms of their patriot dead. Help us to drown the thunder of the guns with the shrieks of their wounded, writhing in pain. Help us to lay waste their humble homes with a hurricane of fire. Help us to wring the hearts of their unoffending widows with unavailing grief. Help us to turn them out, roofless with their little children, to wander unfriended the wastes of their desolated land in rags and hunger and thirst, sports of the sun, flames of summer, and the icy winds of winter. Broken in spirit, worn with travail, imploring thee for the refuge of the grave and denied it. For our sakes who adore thee, Lord, blast their hopes. Blight their lives, protract their bitter pilgrimage, make heavy their steps. Water their way with their tears, stain the white snow with the blood of their wounded feet. We ask it in the spirit of love of Him who is the source of love and who is ever faithful refuge and friend of all that are sore beset and seek His aid with humble and contrite hearts. Amen. After a pause, he continued, Ye have prayed it. If ye still desire it, speak. The messenger of the Most High waits. and let there be silence.
Home again, we'll all go out and welcome him. Never mind the shape he's in. And we'll ask him how the fighting went. We'll ask him how the fighting went. We'll ask him how the fighting went and how he likes the president. Casualties are an accident. We'll beat our drums and wave our flags. We'll beat our drums and wave our flags. We'll beat our drums and wave our flags as great and grand and glorious rags. The ones they put in the body bags. And later on when the sickness comes. Later on when the sickness comes. Later on, when the sickness comes from chemicals and uranium, we'll wring our hands and we'll all play dumb. Veterans who did their part. The veterans who did their part. See the veterans who did their part and came back home with a purple heart. Walking around with a shopping cart. See where are the legs he used to run? Where are the legs he used to run? Where are the legs he used to run before you went to carry a gun? I'm afraid your dancing days are done. You have no arm, you have no leg. You have no arm, you have no leg. You have no arm, you have no leg. You're an armless, legless, chickenless egg. They'll have to put you out with a bowl. Kill them and they'll kill us back. We'll kill them and they'll kill us back. We'll kill them and they'll kill us back. They say it's always been like that. What a load of crap. So tip your hat and take a bow. Tip your hat and take a bow. Tip your hat and take a bow and get on with your life somehow. They're taking your little brother now.
Cross-cultural relations, communicating effectively, is an art unto itself. In nature, all around us, we see a wealth and an abundance in the endless variety of minerals, plants, and animals. Human beings are no exception to this universal rule. We were created to be as different and varied as we are. The gift of understanding and accepting foreign cultures, habits, feelings, thoughts, and customs is difficult for everyone equally. The good news is that it is an art that can be learned. Some of the prerequisites are an open, all-inclusive mind, a heart full with compassion and the will to understand, a deep curiosity for life, and a well-developed sense of humor. To promote world peace and to improve our own personal and professional lives individually, we need to learn to interrelate and communicate on a global level, in a clear and simple manner, to accept each other as we are, with all our idiosyncrasies, and to appreciate our differences, free from all personal prejudices, destructive criticisms, and preconceived limiting ideas and thoughts. Margot Kurdikar, a global citizen.
Unhappy or mad as hell. Well, I share what I am given. Sometimes it makes me scared, but I close my eyes and sing out with my faith. Till we all have faces that someone else can see. Till we all have places in this world. Till we all have voices and true equality, I will sing. When I get down on my knees and pray to the one who made us all, to the gentle mother who I see as God. We create God in our images, then squeeze them in a box and keep them there so that we have control. Till we all have faces that someone else can see. Till we all have places in this world. Till we all have voices and true equality, I will sing. In the name of Christianity, we sacrifice our souls. In the name of Jesus Christ, we crucify. We're all children of the one true God, all equal in the eyes. I believe that we are worthy. I believe. Till we all have faces that someone else can see. Till we all have places in this world. Till we all have voices and true equality, I will sing. And no, I won't be silent, and yes, I will be bold. My songs might be uncomfortable to hear, sing them, I will scream them, I'll lay down my life, I'll be them. And I pray that when you listen, you will really hear. Here we all have faces that someone else can see. Till we all have places in this world. Till we all have voices and true equality, I will sing. Till we all have faces that someone else can see. Till we all have places in this world.
Mr. Bush, I'm coming for you with love. By Robert Rabin. Dear Mr. Bush, today is February 17th. Yesterday I attended the peace rally at the Civic Center in San Francisco along with about 250,000 other people. As diverse a group of human beings as could be found anywhere in the world. I wish you could have been there. You were, as you might suspect, a central topic of conversation. Your picture was on wide display, though not always in the most flattering of ways. Had you been there, you would have heard many people denounce you for your foreign policy and for your domestic policies as well. I do not denounce you. You would have heard many people express their anger and outrage toward you and your administration. I am not angry nor outraged. You would have heard people criticize and condemn you for your implacable stand about war with Iraq. I do not criticize or condemn you. Had you been there, you might have felt that many people even hated you. But I do not hate you, even though you stand alone, belligerent and defiant against the United Nations, against the will and good judgment of the people of the United States, against the will and good judgment of the people of all other nations in the world, against prudence, against reason, against every sacred impulse to preserve life, against the united voices of religious leaders who are the emissaries of wisdom. Even though you stand alone against all of this, I do not hate you. I love you, and I thank you, for you have shown me who is truly responsible and culpable for the current state of affairs. It is not you nor your administration, though it would be easy to make a case against you for bullying the world toward World War III, for threatening all prospects of a peaceful and prosperous future for not just our nation, but for all nations. I will not do so. You are not to blame. I am. Not you, me. This is what you have shown me, and for this I love you and thank you. You have awakened me to my own responsibility for those gathering storm clouds of misery and calamity. Here is what you have taught me. When I should have been awake, I was asleep. When I should have been involved, I was apathetic. When I should have been paying attention, I was distracted. When I should have been concerned, I was disinterested. When I should have spoken up, I was silent. When I should have been active, I was passive. When I should have stood tall, I crouched meekly. This is what you have taught me. You have also reminded me of the core teaching of all spiritual traditions and paths. We are all one being, connected and interdependent, sharing the same soul of light and love. From this view, the truth of which is confirmed by my personal experience, you are my own self. How can I blame you? When I look at you, I see myself. It is not a self I want to see, but there it is. When I see myself in you, I become ashamed, even fearful, for I see how easily I could forget everything I have learned in 30 years of spiritual study and practice. You remind me of who I was, one who had lost his living connection to love. And I am reminded of how without love there is no empathy, and without empathy there is no feeling. And without feeling, one could plan to send 800 cruise missiles into the cribs and carriages of young children whose names and faces do not even exist, except as pinpoints on a map. How one would want to launch a horror the likes of which have never been seen on this earth, how one could simply push away all good and wise counsel with the brutal hand of military might married to arrogance and ignorance, how one could justify unleashing a firestorm of death on a country, half of whose population is under 15 years of age. Though your motives are clear and undisputable, revenge, imperialism, and profit, these are not the true cause. The true cause is that I have forgotten to live what I know. I have forgotten to love the world in real and telling ways. And now I live as you. And though I speak to you, I am speaking to myself. You have helped me remember that I am to live what I know, that I am to love the world in real and telling ways. You have helped me awaken from my apathy with a ferocious passion for life. You have touched something deep within me. You have aroused something that is almost fearsome to behold. It is the power of love, too long forgotten and betrayed. But not now, and I pray not ever again will I forget or betray love. And with this awakened and aroused passionate power of love, I intend to stop you. So I want you to know that I am coming for you. Now that you have shown me that you are a part of my own self, still steeped in forgetfulness and ignorance, I am coming for you, but not with anger or hate or blame. I am coming for you with love. I am going to bring you back into my greater self, the one that could never, ever, not in a billion years, think up the things you have thought up. I am coming for you. And one more thing. Do not underestimate the power of love. Do not add this mistake to the long and growing list of mistakes you have already made. Do not think love is weak or passive or fearful. Love created the universe. Love is a power louder than missiles, more powerful than fear, more conquering than hate. Love cannot be stopped, but you can be, and you will be. Because I am coming to stop you with love.
We
We've connected all of our stories that weave the people's web of peace. Our numbers have grown and are growing, urging all firing guns to cease. We freely give our hearts. We step into the new paradigm, planting these seeds and playing our parts. To love and truth we fully align. Only love prevails on earth, spreading out to all upon her. Only love prevails on earth, open arms, open hearts everywhere. Had I the wings of a dove, I'd fly into the womb of the earth to release the love of humanity as the new day of peace gives birth. Holy love, only
Once upon a time, two brothers who lived on adjoining farms fell into conflict. It was the first serious rift in 40 years of farming side by side, sharing machinery, and trading labor and goods as needed without a hitch. Then the long collaboration fell apart. It began with a small misunderstanding, and it grew into a major difference. And finally, it exploded into an exchange of bitter words followed by weeks of silence. One morning, there was a knock on John's door. He opened to find a man with a carpenter's toolbox. "I'm looking for a few days' work," he said. "Perhaps you would have a few small jobs here and there I can help with? Could I help you?" "Yes," said the older brother. "I do have a job for you. Look across the creek at that farm. That's my neighbor. In fact, it's my younger brother. Last week, there was a meadow between us, and he took his bulldozer to the river levee, and now there is a creek between us. Well, he may have done this to spite me, but I'll go him one better. See that pile of lumber by the barn? I want you to build me a fence, an 8-foot fence, so I won't need to see his place or his face anymore." The carpenter said, "I think I understand the situation. Show me the nails and the post hole digger, and I'll be able to do a job that pleases you." The older brother had to go to town, so he helped the carpenter get the materials ready, and then he was off for the day. The carpenter worked hard all that day, measuring, sawing, nailing. About sunset, when the farmer returned, the carpenter had just finished his job. The farmer's eyes opened wide, and his jaw dropped. There was no fence here at all. It was a bridge. A bridge stretching from one side of the creek to the other. a fine piece of work, handrails and all. And the neighbor, his younger brother, was coming across, his hand outstretched. "You are quite a fellow to build this bridge after all I've said and done." The two brothers stood at each end of the bridge, and then they met in the middle, taking each other's hand. They turned to see the carpenter hoist his toolbox on his shoulder. "No, wait, stay a few days. I've a lot of other projects for you," said the older brother. "Well, I'd love to stay on," the carpenter said, "but I have many more bridges to build."
Thank you.
Bill Moyers on patriotism and the flag. I put the flag in my lapel tonight, first time. Until now, I haven't thought it necessary to display a little metallic icon of patriotism for everyone to see. It was enough to vote, pay my taxes, perform my civic duties, speak my mind, and do my best to raise our kids to be good Americans. Sometimes I would offer a small prayer of gratitude that I had been born in a country whose institutions sustained me, whose armed forces protected me, and whose ideals inspired me. I offered my heart's affection in return. It no more occurred to me to flaunt the flag on my chest than it did to pin my mother's picture on my lapel to prove her son's love. Mother knew where I stood, and so does my country. I even tuck a valentine in my tax returns on April 15th. So what's this flag doing here? Well, I put it on to take it back. The flag's been hijacked and turned into a logo, the trademark of a monopoly on patriotism. On those Sunday morning talk shows, official chests appear adorned with the flag as if it is the good housekeeping seal of approval. And during the State of the Union address, did you notice Bush and Cheney wearing the flag? How come? No administration's patriotism is ever in doubt, only its policies. And the flag bestows no immunity from error. When I see flags sprouting on official lapels, I think of the time in China when I saw Mao's little red book on every official's desk, omnipresent and unread. But more galling than anything are all those moralistic icon people in Washington sporting the flag in their lapels while writing books and running websites and publishing magazines attacking dissenters as un-American. They are people whose ardor for war grows disproportionately to their distance from the fighting. They're in the same league as those swarms of corporate lobbyists wearing flags and prowling Capitol Hill for tax breaks, even as they call for more spending on the war. So I put this on as a modest protest to men with flags in their lapels who shoot missiles from the safety of Washington think tanks, or argue that sacrifice is good as long as they don't have to make it, or approve of bribing governments to join the coalition of the willing after they first stash the cash. I put it on to remind myself that not every patriot thinks we should do to the people of Baghdad what some terrorists did to us. The flag belongs to the country, not to the government, and it reminds me that it's not un-American to think that war, except in severe cases of self-defense, is a failure of moral imagination, political nerve, and diplomatic skill. Come to think of it, standing up for your government can mean standing up for your country. What do you think? kind of peace? What kind of peace do we seek? Not a Pax Americana enforced on the world by American weapons of war. Not the peace of the grave or the security of the slave. I am talking about genuine peace. The kind of peace that makes life on earth worth living. The kind that enables men and nations to grow and to hope and to build a better life for their children. Not merely peace for Americans, but peace for all men and women. Not merely peace in our time, but peace for all time. Let us examine our attitude toward peace itself. Too many of us think it is impossible. Too many think it unreal. But that is a dangerous, defeatist belief. It leads to the conclusion that war is inevitable, that mankind is doomed, that we are gripped by forces we cannot control. We need not accept that view. Our problems are man-made, therefore they can be solved by mankind. And man can be as big as he or she wants. No problem of human destiny is beyond human beings. Man's reason and spirit have often solved the seemingly unsolvable, and we believe we can do it again. President John F. Kennedy, commencement address at American University in Washington on June 10, 1963. What timeless wisdom! It's yours to embrace, and once you believe it, become it. The victor is the human race. Until next time, this is Joy Ray Freeman, wishing joy and peace to the world. This is Joy Ray Freeman, bringing joy to the world. Can you see how it works when you look beyond the dark veil, the way we co-create? How the tide can be changed when we all participate? Do you know yet how powerfully our collective hearts beat? What a wonder to behold as we claim freedom and peace. Now there is still more to do, so on your laurels do not rest. Creating heaven on earth is a lifetime commitment, not just a brief test. If you are still an observer, then it's time to jump in. You are a creator. We are the victors as peace, freedom, and joy do win.